Welcome to the Wide World of Punting, where we talk about anything and everything in the world of punting. This is episode 14. I'm still slightly under the weather, but I'm out of the COVID protocol. Here with a quick show for you, probably shorter than usual. We're doing Ask Winning Everything. Thanks to everyone who sent through the questions in the tripod group. I'm going to dive into a bunch of your questions about me to start this show. I've got Tristan from Top Sport with Behind Bookie Lines. This week, we're talking about betting markets for all those unusual events where the result is sometimes known before the event takes place. We had the Hottest 100, the Dally M scandal, betting on reality TV. So all those types of curly ones we'll talk about. And then I got your Wide World Bet of the Week. Proud to say we did get back in the winner's circle last week. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. Let's jump into Ask Winnie Anything.
So on Alex's farewell pod, which I think was episode 4, we had Ask Alexi Anything, and then you guys really responded well to the Ask Tristan Anything, which we had on episode 12 and 13 in parts 1 and 2. And again, thanks for all the great questions that got sent through that Tristan gave answers to. So I thought only fair, we're nearing the end of this season. Let's ask Winnie Anything. So I put the poll up there in the group and we've got a few questions come through. So let's see how we go. Hamish Hawlian asks, best future NRL play this season? So, of course, last season, our futures play we shared once the season resumed from COVID was the Panthers to win the minor premiership, $7 across the board, and it's pretty much a done deal with 2 weeks to go in the season. Then, not that it's won yet, but we've given out the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl, $8.50, shared all the reasons why it was a rare case where you had a Super Bowl champion that was still underrated. And I don't want to go the early crow. They're $1.55 in the Super Bowl in about 10 days' time. And I know lots of you guys are riding some big tickets on that. We've got a post going in the group. So, of course, you guys all want the next one. So I'd love to give you my best future NRL play for the 2021 season. It's just two problems. So one is it's actually really rare to find great value in a future. You've got to tie up your money for several months. The bookies don't want to be giving out any great value. And you'll find if you add up the percentage probabilities of all the options in the list in a future, it adds well above 100%, which basically means you're getting unders on nearly every tip. So it's very hard to find great value. And the other part of it is I have not done deep dive for the NRL 2021 season. So I definitely will be turning my attention to the NRL once the NFL finishes late February and obviously into early March. I'll do a season preview. If I've found any NRL futures players that I like the look of with good value, I'll definitely share them out then. So sorry to disappoint, I just don't have one I can strongly endorse right now, but I will share out any great value if I find it. Sam Bowen asks, what's your long-term goals for Tripod? And this is a tricky one too, because things are ever changing, ever evolving, as we've seen over the last 6 years, and I've never really known what the future will hold. So, I mean, when we began the pod, we just did it purely for fun. I think if I'm honest, maybe I had a dream that, like, we could end up with the pod being on Fox League or being picked up by a radio station or something that where everyone who follows NRL and punts on NRL wanted to at least know our opinion on the upcoming games. But nowadays, I don't really feel like you need to be picked up by a network or really your show doesn't need to appear anywhere. You can just produce content independently, basically, as we have done. And if it's good enough, then people will watch it and tune in. So that I think my goal, I can just tell you in the short term, I'm all in for NRL 2021. So I'm definitely going to be previewing the games every single week. I'm definitely going to be sharing best bets. Beyond that, it really just comes down to how much engagement I get and how many people can follow and whether we can continue to grow from there. But I mean, other long-term goals, I'd love to still be able to do the pod with this man again. One day, Alexi, but we, you know, let's hope that there's opportunities in the future, maybe with more sponsorship where it can be worth his while to ever do the pod again. Andrew Martin asks, how big's your wing wang? So a little bit of a worrying trend there. I'm noticing Andrew asked the same question on the Ask Alexi Anything. I guess we should be thankful he didn't ask that one to Tristan as well. But I will say, just back on when we started the pod, we only ever intended to do a podcast. People may think that I want everyone to get to know me or to see my face, or I want to put myself out there. Really, a couple of things. When we started, and I'll bring this full circle and talk about my wing wang in a second, but when we started the pod, we never wanted our faces on the logo. This was actually done by a man called Ev Sanity. Without
any of our input. He just grabbed a couple of our photos off Facebook, chucked them together. Next thing, we had a logo with our mugs on them. And then we were just an audio podcast for the first two full seasons that we were sharing tips. But when Facebook video, live videos became really big, we just saw it as an opportunity to reach more people. So we very reluctantly started doing videos, and we've done them to this day because for some strange reason, people like to watch the pod rather than just listen to it. And that means that people are looking at our face, and it's something I never wanted anybody to be doing, would be looking at my face. I've definitely got a face for radio. And to answer your question, Andrew, I've got a wing wang for radio as well. Do I still speak to Alexi much? How's he getting on? That question's from Alex Jones. I do still speak to Alex. I guess not as frequently. Quite crazy that we did this together for over 6 years. And we would like talk to each other every single day. So in a way, it's probably been a good break for him to not have to talk to, you know, someone every single day, not have me chewing his ear off. But everything I'm hearing, he's really enjoying the new role at GBC, Ladbrokes, Ned's, working in the odds making and bookmaking team there. I asked him if there's any chance getting him back anytime soon. He said that would definitely be an underdog. Good news is that the job's gone well for him and he's really enjoying it. Andrew McCluskey asks, will you be doing the 14-leg tennis multis for Australian Open? So I am aware that there's a 70% odds boost on Bet365. And, you know, this is, you were just talking about Alexi, like, this is one of the things that you miss once someone's gone. Like, I've never even pretended to be a tennis expert or had any input into any of our tennis tips that we've shared over the last 6 years. But I struggle to recall a Grand Slam where Alex wasn't giving out long odds tennis multis and at least hitting a couple of them, especially those early rounds of those Grand Slams. And he's gone now, but I am going to work behind the scenes to try and get us someone who's very confident with their tennis tipping to provide us some banger big leg Australian Open multis. Aussie Open, of course, starts in a couple of weeks. My biggest winning bets. Thanks for the positive question there. Who's that from? Antonator Nader. The one and only. Yeah, there's a few that come to mind. I think late 2015, I had an NFL and NBA multi, 1,000 to 1, $100 on it. So paying over $100,000, which is famously, and I posted this on the pod and through, you know, our social media pages that we were running at the time. That was famously a time where I went against the pod rule of never cash out. And I did cash out. I think I've got it on the screen here. So the first leg was actually the undefeated Golden State Warriors, who were 24-0 and eviscerating everybody after winning the title the year before. Played, I think, a double overtime game in Boston. Klay Thompson rolled his ankle. And then they went into an underrated Milwaukee team with a very unheralded player called Giannis Antetokounmpo. He may have been a rookie or second-year player at the time. And I really thought that Milwaukee could roll them. So I not only bet Milwaukee in that game, I bet Milwaukee to win 11 plus. They did. That was 17 to 1. So when your multi gets off to a start like that, it's not bad. Then there was a couple of other, I think, NBA, NFL games that got up. And it came down to the Sunday Night Football, which was, you know, a Monday midday in Australia. And I stood to win 100K. And that, the one caveat to never cash out, or the two caveats, is if the cash out price is actually representing a fair value, then of course cash out. It's just that 99% of the time that's not the case. The other time you cash out is if it's a life-changing amount of money. For me, certainly 100K was, and even a cash out value definitely was. And so I called up Sportsbet and they told me there was no cash out available. And I said, I can see that, but is there something you can talk to the manager about? Because I stand to win 100K here. Just want to know if you want to give me a cash out figure. They said, we'll call you back. I crunched the numbers myself about what I would have to do to like hedge on the other side. And basically, and I was betting against the New England Patriots with the Houston Texans, and I was an underdog in the final leg, obviously. So I worked out that a fair cash out was probably around 30,000 with my leg over $3 odds of winning. And I basically worked out, just with the hassle of trying to put on like a five-figure bet on the other side, basically, if I could get a cash out of around 28,000, I was going to accept the offer. They called back, they offered 31, and I said, all right, I'll take it and I'll live with it. And, you know, and I just felt that part of me was like, oh, you know, it's so rare that you're going to get yourself in a position to win a six-figure multi. you know, you should let it ride in the long run. You know, it's probably the more optimal play. But I just felt like no matter what, I could live with the result of cashing out before the game and locking in that 31,000. Had to work that day. I had the game recorded when I got home. Houston lost the game, something like 24-6. Wasn't even really close. So not that I think I made a good decision because they lost, but I was comfortable with the decision either way. That was huge. What else? I'm happy to say a couple of the other biggest wins I've ever had were on 100-1 or over multis that I shared in the pod that a lot of you guys jumped on as well. So 2017, if you can recall that multi, we had the Knights to beat the Warriors by 11-20. They did. We had Broncos to beat the Titans by more than 4.5. They won 54-0. Had the Raiders to upset the defending champion Sharks and had to cover, I think, -5.5. They won the game by 18. And the beauty of that multi was then it rolled into the Raiders the very next week. And had they won that game, which they did, kept their season alive. And had the Warriors lost that game, basically meant they were a lame duck. And we got the Raiders -1.5 in a Sunday afternoon game in New Zealand in a look-ahead line in a multi when the line closed -13.5. And luckily, it wasn't much of a sweat. And I did have a really nice chunk on that one as well. Another great NBA win. I had the Boston Celtics in Game 3 of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Cavs. You probably won't remember the series very well, but the Cavaliers went into Boston and flogged Boston like 30 or 40 points in Games 1 and 2. And then in Game 3, Isaiah Thomas, who was Boston's best player, was out with a hip injury. I don't think he ever played for the club again. Boston was a -17-point underdog, $18 head-to-head. I mean, you will so very rarely see a head-to-head team, $18. I somehow just liked the doggedness of that Boston team. I like that squad. I think you guys have seen us give a lot of tips on Boston since Coach Stevens got there. Took them $18 head-to-head in a multi that was something like 300-1. And they were down 20 in that game. So imagine having a team that was $18 head-to-head to win that is down 20. They came back and won. They won on a buzzer-beater 3 in the end. I remember being at a cafe with the missus and watching the game through like the William Hill app and like yelling and embarrassing her really badly. And then that multi was tied into a couple of other NRL teams on games I was really confident in because it was the origin period and some sides were totally depleted. Like I remember going against the Broncos team that had half the side out. So that multi gets up and it was a bonus bet multi. So then I had a huge amount of funds in my Willie Hill account that I had to turn over. We were just in time for Origin 1. Had a really strong feeling that Queensland was in for it in that game. New South Wales had a stronger side. New South Wales was an underdog in Game 1, but that's the game. If you recall, New South Wales wins about 26-4. And so I just went all in, basically loading those funds that needed to be turned over into New South Wales. And then just in general, that 2017 NRL season, we won 66% of our best bets. And I was betting any of those that I could get at on the William Hill app at the time. We won game 2 of the Origin, which was the great Queensland comeback where Jonathan Thurston kicks the sideline conversion late. And then came brought it home and backed Queensland again in Origin 3. So that whole period, that was the end of my William Hill account, but that was a very, very lucrative run. And then the other time that I've given out 120-1 and won for the pod was, of course, the NFL in 2018. And the crazy part was, gave out 100-1 or like 113-1 multi the week before, which lost by one leg, which was, I think, Detroit losing to Dallas on a field goal after or as time expired. And that was the only losing leg of 100-1 multi. The very next week, came back with 120-1 multi and cashed it. And it came all the way through to, I think, the Monday night game. So the standalone game on a Tuesday. We had Houston against Dallas. They blew a lead. The game goes to overtime. Houston ends up pulling out a win in overtime. And I didn't have a Bet365 account that I could bet into at that point in time in 2018, but I still had a Neds account. And I had basically that weekend where we gave out, you know, however many winning bets to hit a 120-1 multi. I was on all of those kind of same sides and totals in different combinations. So I still stood to win a massive chunk that day. And the sweetest part of those big wins was the fact that, as I said, that I gave out those plays on the pod and a lot of you guys got on them too. Can Alexi get Chase the Ace going on Lads? Well, it's something I'll definitely ask him. But as I said, I'm going to try and get the best tennis tips I can available for you guys for the Aussie Open. We'll see what we can do, as well as probably some tennis-related Why World Bet of the Week. And Dan Lever asks, how do you stay on top of what's going on in sport? How do you consume so much sporting content each week? So I'm really grateful for this question, because maybe I give you guys one or two tips that you can take away and get more content, consume more content yourself, but also it will help you get to know me and how much of a weirdo I am. So before I tell you how I consume so much sport content, I guess I'll tell you things I don't do. I don't watch Netflix. I don't have like a personal Instagram account. I have personal Facebook, but I spend my whole time on Jacob Wynn. I don't really watch any TV shows other than live sport or sports talk shows. And when I say live sport, that's not even totally true, because truthfully, the way that I consume so much sport is with my Foxtel IQ box. So I basically record anything that I'm interested in watching. And then I almost actually quite rarely watch it live these days. I quite often come along after any game has started and just chase through it. And that just allows me to watch so much more in less time. So I'm fast forwarding every ad break. I'm fast forwarding every stoppage. So, I mean, if you ever came over to my house and wanted to watch a game like that with me, you would go insane. I've got it down to an art, the amount I'm fast forwarding between players. Like, I'm watching NBA, and the second that the ball's almost like rebounded or goes through the hoop, I'm fast forwarding those few seconds till it's up the other end of the court. So that helps. Watching highlights is not as good as watching a full game, but watching highlights is better than not watching anything. So I love watching like the condensed games on YouTube. Certainly with the NRL, in that when the footy season's on, I'm watching every minute of every game and watching press conferences. And then the other big thing is, when I'm not sitting in front of the TV, is I always have headphones in my ears. So no matter what I'm doing, if I'm driving, I've got my phone plugged into my car Bluetooth and I'm listening to podcasts. I'm listening to information. I'm listening to discussion about all the different sports, about all the different leagues, just to kind of build up my knowledge and just keep my finger on the pulse, basically. Mowing the lawn, hanging laundry, like I've got headphones in and I'm trying to get as much information into my brain as I can, just to help me be as informed as I can when I make any decision. What's your tally up to? Somehow I don't think that's necessarily the best bet record, because that's very easy for you guys to find, and we always keep that maintained. That's been maintained since day one. So if you're talking about a different type of tally, let's just say take the under. Can we expect any new design tripod merch anytime soon from Jeff Craner? Previous question about my tally was Avinash Sharma, by the way. Shout out. So with the merch, it's like, I know a lot of people that have a brand or a big group following will definitely create merchandise and there's an opportunity to monetize. But just to reiterate, I think we've told you guys a few times, like, we've never made a cent off any type of merchandise, and I don't really think that tripod merchandise is ever going to be something that's ever going to take off, just because I do totally understand that, you know, you don't necessarily want to be walking around the shops with a t-shirt that's, you know, saying that you're a degenerate punter, or, you know, not necessarily going to impress the missus. So look, I absolutely love seeing blokes represent. I love the fact that some lads want to rep tripod merch, and, you know, and especially if I go to the footy and I see someone wearing a tripod shirt, like, I find that so cool. But it's only ever been something that we've set up for people who've asked for it, some cool t-shirts or hoodies or whatever, with tripod logo on it. Now we do have a new logo. I hadn't even thought of that until you got this question, but yeah, maybe down the line I'll chuck that logo on some merch if people are interested. And then I've got a couple other questions here, which I actually think are such good questions that I want to combine them and actually spend about 5 minutes answering them next week. And that is, Brent Creel has asked, if you could start your punting life over again, what would you do differently? And I just find that so loaded, it's so layered, and it really got me thinking. And I'd love to like talk more about like, yeah, my whole punting journey from the first time I placed a bet to the first time I opened an online account, the lessons I learned, the hard lessons I learned, what I would do differently if I could go back in time. So I think that's worthy of a whole segment. And then Toby Mackay asks, what's your overall betting profit for your lifetime, and has it been a solid source of income? And I can probably tie that in with like my whole betting experience, and I'm, you know, in my 30s now, but obviously started before I was even 18, I can probably give you guys a bit of a snapshot of where I'm at and then how that's tied in with running the pod. I think that's all the questions. When's pod going to be breaking down European handball? You know, like, that's from James Corey. Well, I want to give an opportunity to anybody who's an expert in anything, because that's not me. I'm not an expert in every sport, but there is somebody out there who's profiting in every sport. And if people think that they've got an edge and that they've got knowledge that is valuable to others, then use the tripod to showcase what you know. And as you guys have seen through this season of Wild Water Punting, like, I'm, you know, it's certainly not a competition, and I love to bring other punters on, let people share their knowledge, and help everyone who follows, help everyone out as well. So I'm not the European handball guy you're searching for, but maybe somebody else is. And don't be shy. Jump into the pod, share what you know. Joel Martineau says, no questions, just thanks for Wild World of Punting. It's been awesome. Oh, thanks, Joel. Thanks for being here. Thank you to everyone who's here, and thank you for everyone who sent through the questions as well. Hope you got a little bit out of that, guys. Now let's jump into my chat with Tristan, talking about setting markets for voted awards and reality TV.
Yeah, we're always erring on the side of caution on these sort of markets. We only had a very select few. We had the outright winner. I think we had Fave v Field and maybe, I don't know, something else. I'm not too sure. But we sort of always cringe a little bit when we see these markets come through. They're not the greatest betting propositions, especially to our database. You know, like, I think for customers that are, you know, having their 5 and 10 very social bets, it's great for your really big scaled organisations. But for someone like us, where we've got the pro punters and the people in the know that know what they're doing, and we have our strong limits, like we'll bet everyone to lose 500 even on these sort of things. So it's a bit dangerous from our end. We prefer not to get too heavily involved. But like, for example, the winner on the weekend, Heat Waves, it opened at 250, 260 in the marketplace, and it was just one-way traffic, and it was smashed into $1.50 with us, and it was easily our worst way. Like, we would be, if we break square on an event like that, we've had a huge result. We normally factor in it's a bit of a loss leading business. You have to put it up to get a bit of interest out of it. We just try to limit our losses and duck for cover.
And you said anyone could win 500. So that means someone could have had like $1,000 on Heatwave and they could have won, you know, for a return of 1500, in total, for example. So it's not like nothing, but I'm just curious, is this a kind of event where, because it's public voting, do you guys have any concern that it can be manipulated by a mass number of people mobilizing, all betting on the same event and then all trying to like vote? You know how some of these punting groups, including the Tripod one, has tens of thousands of people. Yep. Is there a bookie concern that punters can actually influence the result of a publicly voted event?
Oh, for sure. And I think that's why the limits on these sort of things aren't anywhere near as liquid as most of your other markets. Like, as I said, we bet to lose 500, and we laid the winner Heat Wave from 250 into $1.50. We laid it multiple times, so I think we lost about 10 grand on the event at the end of it. It is a risk, but it's also that there just isn't a hell of a lot of, I wouldn't feel there's a hell of a lot of big money transacting, which would probably lead to that sort of stuff occurring.
For you to be greatly concerned. Yeah, fair enough. And I recall even a few years ago, I think it was 2016, the winner of the Hottest 100 was leaked. They accidentally published in an article early. So that's such a weird phenomenon, people betting on things where it's pre-known. And speaking of that, of being pre-known, result leaked, it was famously in the 2019 Dally M, if we look at the NRL Awards night, Coach of the Year. I don't know if other results were leaked as well, but famously a lot of punters filled up on Craig Bellamy at some pretty juicy odds, being in the know that he had won that award. How do you deal with these kind of voted awards where, obviously, no matter how good, strong the integrity is, there's always a few people that know the result prior to the announcement?
Yeah, oh, there is, and it's a dangerous market to bet on. Like, we, as a result, we don't offer the wide range of markets that potentially some of the other operators offer, because we are aware that they're, oh, I wouldn't call them integrity issues, but just as you say, they're people that have to know, and we just keep our limits very, very tight. We move hard on that first bet. We just try to get out of the road and just try not to put ourselves into a position where we're, you know, where the liability is something that we're uncomfortable with. It was a very famous case, as you say, the Bellamy situation. You know, it's got quite a lot of media attention. You know, I know there were, a few people that obviously were upset being on the losing side of things, and that's where it's emanated from. You know, like, from our end, we just copped it. You know, if you put your price up on those markets, you have to know that there's going to be people out there that potentially do know what's happening. So you just have to treat the ball that's in front of you. And yeah, we did lose on the event, you know, but it wasn't anything that was worth sort of worrying about from our point of view. It was just one of those ones where I think it was 6.50 into 2.40 into $1.60 or something like that. So you just move hard on those sort of more obscure markets. And it's just a different format where the Brownlow goes hand in hand with betting, where Daly M is just a different one. And then I don't really think that's going to change. You know, there was the David Fairley situation many, many years ago. I'm probably showing my age here. Probably a lot of your listeners wouldn't even know what happened there, but that was a leak of the winner and he was backed off the map. And we actually weren't betting on sport at that stage. So I don't know the exact figures of what he shifted into, but I do remember it was a massive go. He was, I don't know, 15s or 10s or something into nothing. And he saluted accordingly. So it was a little bit like the Bellamy situation, but it was probably to a bigger extent because of probably one of those ones where it was back in the day, you know, punters probably could get set for a little bit more different sort of avenues. So
do you have a bit of a policy then for how you would handle a suspicious plunge on any type of voted award?
Oh, from our policy probably is when some sharp money comes in early in the piece on any of these things, we just move hard. We would move a lot harder in pricing than what we would on any other event, you know, particularly if a customer is, if their betting history is predominantly on these sort of events. You know, if someone bets on everything and it's within their usual betting pattern, we probably wouldn't be as concerned. But, you know, we've got some customers that purely bet on entertainment or your reality TV series are always the fraught with danger whenever we put those markets up.
Every season of every show, there's some bloke in a punting group who claims he's the brother-in-law of a hairdresser of someone who just won The Bachelorette or one Master Chef. So again, I presume you don't have an in-house setting of those odds. You try and follow the marketplace.
Bachelor, the Voice, Master Chef, all these sort of things. So like you just sort of see, like there was one, I remember a couple of years ago in Survivor, it was down to the final three and there'd been heavy money it was one of the ones where they actually got it wrong, I think, where there was a short price favorite for the bulk of the series. And then when it got down to the final three, the roughie, who looked like she had none to win the event, back from about $9 into $1.20. So whether it was the people in the know were maybe even throwing a curveball to potentially on the understanding think that they'll be able to get a bit more on later in the series, I don't know. So we ended up in a great position coming into the last three, and then we probably took a bit more on the $9 shot, thinking, you know, we were offsetting the $1.50 shot we'd laid earlier in the piece. I can't remember the names of the competitors, unfortunately, but it was, I remember it was in Lee's series, actually, in the Survivor, and whoever ended up knocking him off. But it, she went $9 into about $1.50 in the last sort of 24, 48 hours. And that was a bit of a disappointing watch because we were, we thought we were in a decent spot for once on a futures book.
That's why we should caution, like, quite often the betting move, there's a reason behind it, but every now and then there could be a false move, or because you move so quickly, people could be piggybacking on an odds move and actually create a massive plunge potentially for the wrong contestant. And that's why you can't just back the favorite in every entertainment market, because go back to the hottest 100, there have been surprise winners, and there are surprise winners in reality TV as well. So
yeah, it's always a tricky one. And you have to understand from our traders' point of view as well, when we hear these rumours, we see the money coming and we see the piggyback money and we just assume it's virtually all over. We're just trying to get out of the road. And as you say, if someone's played it smart and thrown you a dummy or thrown you a curveball, there's opportunities there when the prices drift out late to be able to utilise the real information. So yeah, it is cautious unless you are really in the know, you know. Have a bit of fun on it. Like, it's a good fun market to bet into, but yeah, it's danger for all parties, I think.
Thanks again to Tristan. Hard to believe that there's just really no such thing as free money. Time for the Wide World Bet of the Week. So as I said at the start of the pod, we got back in the winner's circle. We didn't do it totally easy last week. We needed the Chiefs-Bills AFC Championship game in the NFL to be higher scoring than the Packers-Buccaneers in the NFC. And the Packers-Buccaneers game was first and saw 57 points in a game where the total over-under was about 52. So especially, I think the first half had 31 points, including a touchdown basically in the final second of the half. So didn't look like it's going to go away with the first game a little higher scoring than I anticipated. But luckily, Kansas City, just an absolute juggernaut. And as I mentioned at the start of this pod as well, or in the Ask Winnie Anything, we're very fortunate to have the Chiefs at $8.50 to win the Super Bowl. And now they're like $1.50, $1.60. and they put up 38 points. That got us home. So we cashed $2.25. ROI now 113% throughout the series, and we've got three to go, and here's the third last one. And I try and mix it up. This show is called Wide World of Punting. Let's go to the UK. Of course, the biggest sport over there taking place is the English Premier League, soccer, football, whatever you like to call it. Let me say it again. This show is not me pretending to be an expert on every sport that's on. I am not that. It is shaping up to be a really interesting season, and we are right at the halfway point of the EPL season. Now, Liverpool won the league, you might have heard last year. That was pretty big. I think like a 30-year drought for Liverpool. And they won with like the record number of points ever by a team. So they're an absolute juggernaut last year. And this year they're coming fifth. So it's very open. You've got the two Manchester clubs sitting first and second. It's Manchester United who I think, as I record this, are coming second. But they're playing as a $1.25 favourite tomorrow. Most likely win that, and they'll be top of the league, and they're probably the biggest and most famous of all the Premier League clubs still. And that's the team we're going to bet against, and they're playing their huge traditional rivals in Arsenal. Arsenal had a nightmare start to this season. When Arsenal and Man United play this weekend, Arsenal's probably going to be about 10 spots lower on the ladder, but they will be at home, and they have found some form in some recent results, starting to climb the ladder a little bit. You look at the current odds, these two teams really don't look that far apart. I think both sides are paying under $3 to win. My tip is Arsenal to win the game or draw, and also to score at least one goal. It's paying $2.25 on Top Sport. You can have up to $200 on that. Now, if you just simply think Man United wins this game, as I said, they're probably going to be top of the ladder, 10 spots higher. You're not going to want to back this tip. You're going to want to back Man United, and you're going to easily get around $2.50. But if you want to oppose that side that is like far higher on the ladder, basically this is like taking Arsenal double chance or plus half a goal handicap, and you'll find that at about $1.50 to $1.60 with the bookies. But we also need Arsenal to at least score one goal. And you'll find if you're just betting Arsenal to score, that's paying around $1.30. So we need $1.60 and $1.30 event to both happen. So where's the value? Well, the value is those two are highly correlated. For Arsenal to win or draw, it's much more likely if they score a goal. And you combine the two, and the likelihood, in my view, is still better than 50-50, but we get this tip paying $2.25. Simple as that. The game takes place Sunday morning, early morning, Australian time. If you're not a diehard EPL fan, you probably don't have the package to even follow it, but you can watch the highlights on Optus Sport on YouTube Sunday morning. That's what I'd be doing. And if you like the sound of this tip, you like the value and you're on it, you can cheer it on Sunday morning when you wake up. So let's see if we can turn the Wide World Bet of the Week into a little win streak here. Next week, we're going to turn our attention to tennis, as well as the Super Bowl is going to be coming up. We'll have that little bit segment that I teased ahead about my own punting journey and advice behind bookie lines, as always. We're going to have an NBA check-in. And the Wide World Bet of the Week, I dare say, will be on the Super Bowl as well, if not tied in with the Australian Open. So huge show next week. But thanks for tuning in this week. Hope you enjoyed it. As always, gamble responsibly. Legal.